Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing the program on the other side of the glass. Tom, hard to believe, 43 years ago today, do you know what happened?
Well, today is not the 7th.
No.
And it was more than 43 years ago, what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, no, this was the John Lennon assassination.
Oh, that's true.
43 years ago.
Yeah.
Outside the Dakota apartment in New York City, John Lennon gunned down. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, which is part of the ever-growing Bustos Media Tucson, dare I say, empire. That would be a little too much, but we've got five radio stations now under one roof here. KVOI is this particular station, 1030. The Voice, trusted source for news and talk. We begin our 14th year in January with our radio program, and then the 36th year on TV and radio here in Tucson. So we have there's been a lot of water, Jan Lesher, under the bridge. Jan Lesher, Pima County Administrator, with me in studio. And Jan, it's not like you got off the bus yesterday.
No. Not exactly. I think the last time I was here, Bill, we were chatting about the fact I was just going to my 50th high school reunion. So that gives people a little idea of A, my age, and B, how long I've been in Tucson.
We have our worldwide live listening and podcasts at buckmastershow.com for our telephone interviews. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, we like our Friday shout out to go out and say thank you very much to people like Dylan Smith and his team at TucsonSentinel.com. They proudly display the Buckmaster Show link on their homepage, as does the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. And Dan Shear is the editor of those two publications. Dan with me in studio today. Dan, thanks for everything you do for this program.
Thank you, Bill. And I was a senior in high school when that shooting happened 43 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, remember the Howard Cosell? It was Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? And yeah. Howard Cosell broke the news.
That's how a lot of people found out.
Yeah, how a lot of people found out. Other media friends, we thank Tucson Local Media Group, their portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today with Jan Lesher, Pima County Administrator. Jan, always a pleasure to welcome you back to our microphone.
Thank you so much, Bill. It's good to be here.
You're on the front page of the paper today, I guess. That's nothing new.
Not where we want to be.
No, well, it's all about this. You know, people want to avoid the so-called street release of asylum seekers. Can you assure our listeners that that might not be imminent?
I'm afraid it's not going to happen. I'll tell you where we are,
okay.
Bill and Dan, and what's been occurring is, you know, there have been, legal asylum seekers coming into the country for a long, long time. Pima County began to get involved in April of 2019, and people may remember that's when the Benedictine Monastery opened in January of 2019, and we began to see a surge, if you will. We became involved in 2019, in April of that year, and looking at a variety of facilities, and have been assisting in that. Customs and Border Protection can only keep individuals who have asked for asylum for a limited period of time, and then they are released in the community. We began to develop the model in which then the individuals are brought to a point that is managed by under a contract arrangement with Catholic Community Service, but paid through Pima County. But the reason Pima County has been able to do that is that every dollar we've spent has come from the federal government, paid to take care of this federal problem by the federal government. The numbers that are coming are far in excess of anything we had ever thought possible.
What did you think was possible back in the day?
Jeepers, we built a model to fund if we were thinking if we got 500 a day, maybe 750 a day, mm-hmm. we could keep that going.
And
we
You're at double that, aren't you?
Well, Wednesday was 1,900.
Oh, my goodness.
Yesterday, we think, was over 2,000.
I thought we were around 1,500. It's now skyrocketed to 2,000?
We think it will hit 2,000, and we don't know when that's going to end. And couple that with the fact that then the amount of the funding mechanism that the federal government uses that used to be called Emergency Food and Shelter Program now is called SSP. It's a shelter services program. The importance is that it is a significantly less money and much more restrictive money. And so it would fund about 750 people a day in lean circumstances. We are getting much more than that. So our concern has been, and the hope not only, of course, for the individual seeking asylum, but for our own community, that people not simply be released in the community, that taking 1,900 people and leaving them at the bus station really doesn't help anyone within the community. And I always become concerned that you know, bad happens fairly quickly when mm-hmm. something like that occurs. Mm-hmm. Because of the money from the federal government, we have first stood up a facility out at the old juvenile detention facility and now have purchased a facility, an old warehouse, in which there's been a fairly robust operation for some period of time. We are spending time really scrubbing every aspect of the operations, cutting back on the food, cutting back on the kind of food, cutting back on availability of any of a kind of motel room, and that was what was required. Motels sound fancy, but particularly in the days of the pandemic, if people came in and tested COVID positive or had a family member with measles or things, we isolated that group until there was a clean bill of health, so that we weren't taking someone with a communicable disease and putting them on an airplane to go somewhere else in the country. So
it's a mess.
It's a mess, and it's a federal problem. We're not seeing a lot of help from partners throughout the state as well. Limited individuals going into the Phoenix area, and that's our predicament. How do we make sure that the federal government funds a uniquely federal problem and allows it to continue in a way that might be sustainable?
Okay, Dan, join our conversation.
So let's go back to the actual process. Somebody who mm-hmm. is seeking asylum, and I want to reiterate what you said, that these are, when they reach our state, they're legal, but a lot of them will either jump over the wall and wait for Border Patrol to come pick them up, and then they want to make that claim for asylum, or they enter through a port, and they go through this initial interview and they get the okay, and then they come in and really they have to have a place that they're going to, either a church sponsor or family member.
Have to have a sponsor.
And so the ones that are coming through Pima County and who we are housing and feeding are here on average how long?
72 hours is the average.
Okay, so we're just sweeping them on through.
Absolutely.
Here. And you say that it is a federal problem, but it sounds like a Pima County problem. So the question is, did we build a system that brought more people to Pima County? Did we bring this upon ourselves?
Dan, I don't believe so, and I'll tell you, we've been looking at that long and hard, because I thought if we've developed a model that looks so nice that people come here, then we would have changed the model fairly quickly. But in talking with, we meet with the sector director of Customs and Border Protection regularly. We are on the phone with people at FEMA and Customs and Border Protection in the White House regularly to ensure that that has not been the case. I believe there are other factors involved, as I was listening to you on the radio the other morning talking about mm-hmm. some of the concerns at Lukeville and what are the other, what's causing any of that to occur. We think it's simply that between the Nogales and Douglas ports of entry, we just have a lot of people coming across, and for some reason now they're being moved into the Tucson region. What we saw historically, Customs and Border Protection sometimes busing people from one port of entry to another to be processed. We're not seeing that happening anymore. We're not seeing the sweeps of people coming here. We are simply, for some reason, seeing large numbers. And you're right, Dana, when you talk about people could jump a wall and seek asylum, the one thing to be clear, Pima County is not the group that does that initial
sure.
screening, but for CBP to drop them with us, we have to be told that they are part of a legal process.
And then so really the issue, and your two memos this week, which were quite alarming, is the fact that we just don't have the money to continue this from the feds. And you say that, again, it's a federal problem, but by virtue of being a border county, it really is our problem.
It is our problem. Well, in that we will see, obviously, the impact of the problem, and that it is our communities into which the individuals might be released. I say that in not our problem, to be clear, in that we have always believed that this is not something that the local taxpayers should pay. And to be clear, federal tax dollars are obviously also paid by individuals from Pima County, but Iowa and New York as well. But it is not appropriate for the general fund to be spending millions of dollars necessarily to move people through.
And have we done any of that? How much have Pima County taxpayers paid out that others feeding into the federal system have not?
Nothing.
Zero.
Zero. Well, and I'll be clear. I get paid a salary. Part of my day may go to work with that. So there could be, you know, some dollars from that the general fund that pays me, for example. But we bill just, I think I'm one of the ones, few, that are not billed off to that grant. Everything else, all of the facilities, the food, all of the things that I've been discussing are part of the federal funding.
Well, if it's $2,000 a day, what's to say, Dan and Jan, that it won't double from that? And
Her memo speaks to that.
Yeah,
it's kind of a scary time here, because now we get to the next question: is what does a street release look like?
Right.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what we're looking to find out. As I think I mentioned, as you saw, Dan, in the second memo, it's saying I've got a group that's already convened to start figuring out what that looks like. I was calling it Project Armageddon. Was told not to do that, but you know, I don't know what else to call it.
Cat's out of the bag.
Bad day there. Yeah. What do we do? Where are the locations? You know, do we find land? Do we go to a fairgrounds? Do we talk to the state about the state fairgrounds? Do we partner with the city and look at there? Many of us been here a while. I remember after Hurricane Katrina, individuals went to both the state fairgrounds in Phoenix, and about 1,000 cots were lined up and ready for people who might be coming here from the New Orleans area. And that model, actually, Dan, I keep talking to folks in it. FEMA, again, saying, pretend it's a hurricane. Yeah. Pretend it was a tornado, that there is an emergency of some sort that occurred. And if that had occurred, FEMA comes in, they put up tents, they build infrastructure, they call in the Red Cross, and there is a rather significant response to that sort of incident. We're seeing the same sort of thing could be occurring.
But what do you think the chances are that Maricopa County is going to welcome these folks to the state fairgrounds?
Well, then,
pretty much zero.
And that, as I've said, what I fear with some of this is the first bus will get through. Right.
Sure.
By the second bus,
welcome with open arms.
You know, there's people. Whether there's a blockade or what's going to be stopped?
You brought up Lukeville. That is a very weird situation. We had Ted Maxwell on the show the other day, and from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, and all of his members are just going crazy over this, because this is a time of year where the Mexican shoppers would come, and it's just. Do you have any idea why Lukeville was chosen for the border to be closed there?
Well, and I'll tell you, just first to elaborate on what you've just indicated, in that neck of the woods, we have people crossing the border daily to go to school. I got a call the other day from someone who's crossing for dialysis. There's medical services, and that's gone. The first answer that made really good sense to me came from Dan Scheer when I listened to him on Wednesday morning saying part of it, I think an element that people aren't really talking about publicly involves the cartels who do an extraordinary job figuring out who's coming and going and in and out of which ports of entry yes. along the border.
Right.
And I think there's there's reality to that. And my concern is what I've heard individuals say before is it's just not a good time to go through Lukeville and to head south. Just finding another entry point may not be it, but you are so right that when we look at a Yuma, for example, 80 to 90% of the lettuce and the lemons in the country come from Yuma by individuals and made possible by people crossing the border every day as part of that economy. What's occurring to our economic partners, as you point out, just as we get ready for the holidays, and then people in Yuma and in Nogales, Arizona, and those border towns, Douglas, there's a fluidity, if you will, of people mm-hmm. who are living and working on one side and then perhaps working on one side, living on another, that we those communities rely on that economy and shutting that border. As we've said right before the show, I usually try to figure out, and I'm reasonably good at figuring out what the end game is with what are people yeah. trying to do with this.
Yeah.
And some of these issues recently relating to the asylum seekers in Lukeville stump me mm-hmm. in what people are mm-hmm. hoping to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Dan, what's your take on it?
Well, I have some questions about the ad hoc yep. committee, because yep. you said that they will approach government entities to help. And you mentioned the city of Tucson, possibly. But earlier you mentioned that the state has pretty much not been a help on this. Isn't Katie Hobbs the governor of the entire state? And what really would be their obligation?
Well, I will say to begin that the state gave Pima County $3.1 million to assist with the purchase of the Drexel facility. I think that there is a greater state obligation that we have not seen. And I don't know, should we be looking at the National Guard? Is there something that can help with that? Can they backfill and assist at the ports? If people have had to move from, if the federal workers have had to leave Lukeville to assist at other ports of entry, could the National Guard help with that and help get those get things moving again? Don't know. But I think that's an answer to it. I think that there is the governor can help us ensure that this is a state problem, that simply because individuals are coming into Pima County because we are closer to the border or at the border, we need to share this, and that a responsible, with all due respect to our friends at Tucson International Airport, many more direct flights out of the Phoenix area. We need to be doing a better job and look at DEMA, the Department of Emergency Management at the state, and others to assist with the transportation. Let's get some buses up to Sky Harbor. Let's get to other airports, other bus opportunities, and then make sure that the state is doing their share of this as well.
All right, we're going to pause right here with Jan Lusher, Pima County Administrator, and Dan Scheer from the Green Valley News to talk about my favorite bakery in town. Jan, about now, I bet you could use some comfort food.
About every hour on the hour, actually.
How about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle? Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, where they're getting ready for the holidays. Just the name itself, Kringle, sounds very much Christmassy to me. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com, open right now for lunch, and they open, of course, at 6:30 for a great breakfast. We'll be right back with Jan and Dan.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dan Scheer is with me today. He's my co-media host. We do that on Friday, and then we bring in a newsmaker like Jan Lesher, Pima County Administrator. Dan is editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. He's also the editorial director for now for more than 30 newspapers in 13 states owned by Sierra Vista-based WIC Communication. It seems like every time Dan's on the show, they've added another property to their growing portfolio. So it is, what, 30?
It's over 30.
It's wow.
Yeah, and we have half ownership in about a half dozen. So,
all right.
Yep.
I do want to talk about, and I know, Dan, you want to go back to the migrant situation. Well, why don't I begin like this, Jan? The community releases or street releases. What happens when the people are released on the street? What do they do? I mean,
generally, what has happened in the Nogales area, where I said I believe yesterday was just under 350 individuals released, the CBP attempts to release them near a transportation hub. So they will be released adjacent to a bus station,
yeah.
For example. Mm-hmm. And then they're on their own. So understand, many of these individuals have that next place to go.
Yeah.
There are people who have been transported over to the Drexel facility where we house individuals and have an Uber waiting for them, and off they go. These are not all just people without resources. Some have more than others, but they can make that next arrangement and get on to the next mode of transportation. For others, they are simply sitting outside a bus station. And as I mentioned, less than 40% of these individuals actually are coming directly from Mexico. These are people coming through Mexico, not from Mexico necessarily. So
I mean,
if
you're from Senegal or somewhere, and suddenly you're say, well, this is the end of the line. You're in Tucson, Arizona, and this is a bus stop here. Goodbye.
initially, when the monastery, the Benedictine monastery began, and folks were working in 2019.
Casas Elitis?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It occurred to me that obviously we needed people who could speak Spanish. It didn't occur to me that that would simply be one of a multitude of languages and dialects.
Like French and others.
You name it. And so many indigenous people coming through the areas, and those are, again, different dialects. A lot of challenges.
Dan, I know you're concerned about the health issues.
Right. On your memo that was released yesterday, and if anybody wants to read it, it's gvnews.com. We have it with our story. You mentioned that Dr. Teresa Cullen, who's our health director for Pima County, is quite concerned about the effect on public health from unsheltered releases of hundreds of these asylum seekers. What specifically are her concerns about public health?
And I will say it's the people being released as well as people moving on. We are seeing folk a few years ago, and when this started, we had concerns with the pandemic, obviously, and COVID. We were testing. We see people with our families come through with kids with measles. We got respiratory problems. People can just have the flu. And what we don't want to do is take someone who has the measles, for example, and put them on a plane headed somewhere else. We become patient zero or something, you know, of helping spread around the country. And that's the concern. So we've mentioned when people are coming from all over the world, people have a different, other countries
health
deal with
immunizations.
Absolutely, immunizations are different. But I think the last things that I've really been hearing them talk about are respiratory issues, which I should point out, we do have a dashboard now up at Pima County so that we can track what's happening with flu and other issues. But any of those communicable diseases are frightening when people are simply left out in the community and or are getting on mass transportation.
Your memo says that Dr. Cullen is seeking an emergency declaration of a public health emergency. And last time we saw this was the pandemic, of course, and that allows certain decisions to be made. And you could close theaters or museums or various things. You could get the National Guard out there to help. What is her purpose of declaring this, and what do you think would come of it?
The hope is to be able to access dollars that could be available for us as well then to assist with this program, one of the bigger areas of it. We are scrubbing that the declaration very closely and very carefully to make sure it doesn't have unintended consequences of which you speak, Dan. You're right. Last time it allowed us to do a lot of things that we do not plan to do again with this, but simply to, does it allow us to procure things much quicker. As an example, if I need to go out and get some more buses or another food vendor, I can do that in a different way with a with the declaration.
But there still is a concern about public health because we don't know what's coming over the border as far as disease and viruses, whatever.
Correct.
You know, I was thinking back to when you were at Homeland Security and when I first came to town, like in January, to be 36 years ago, and every year, the border is this top issue. Nothing ever gets done about this.
You know,
what is that movie? Well, Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day.
It's like over and over. I mean.
Well, we were chatting a moment ago. I moved to D.C. to work at the Department of Homeland Security in 2009. And the number one issue we were struggling with was comprehensive immigration reform. And we are, and it wasn't brand new when we got there. So many challenges.
You know, a story that really got pushed off the back burner because of this, the migrant story, is this the county adopting this effort to reduce poverty and increase opportunity. I think it's called a prosperity initiative. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Bill, thank you for bringing that one up. I think, you know, our board adopted this week, and it is the result of about a year's worth of work for a variety of people. The idea being to set out a list, if you will, of about 13 different policies and opportunities that allow other jurisdictions and other communities to choose from to see what might work in their community, but to help us really recognize our need to move the needle a bit in that area. I look at it when working in economic development, as an example, the goal is to increase per capita income. And that's what we're looking at with any community, that our community benefits when we can get out of generational poverty and we can get people educated, getting transportation to workplaces.
And for years, the excuse has been, it's Tucson, it's a poor community. You know, we've always heard that.
We hear that a lot. But I think what we've been really attempting to do with this is the idea being it is not prescriptive. We are not telling other communities or businesses or anyone what they need to do or how to do it. But it provides a policy perspective from the county to help us understand what are the things to which we should be, focusing the budget. We can't be everything to everybody. What is it we need to do? And what do we do that can help people ensure that there will be jobs? Can we help them move through those kinds of systems? And that, you know, what's basic health care, as I say? What's transportation? What
are opportunities? Child care, affordable child care, housing mobility, housing stability, health care. Yeah.
Just looking at the basics and what is it we need to do to help the community learn about, move in the direction of, consolidate our resources to impact things like that. As I mentioned in my memo to the board on that, it is the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan, I believe, of our times, in that for those of you around a while, remember the days, jeepers, now 20-plus years ago when we were developing the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan.
That's how I first met Sharon Bronson.
Yep, sure, absolutely, yep. And I that's mean, the, to
that
understand.
That was her big deal.
What are all the rules?
Yeah.
So that everybody understands it's that first, you know, maybe it is a tough compromise and discussion to be held, but then everyone knows where there can be developed, where there can't be development. What are we going to focus on? What will we not do? And that's what we're hoping to do with this, to look at all of the different policies that can be used to help people get out of poverty. And then how do we make sure that we're, again, helping others understand what they might do as a private business or a jurisdiction, which of the tools they might choose.
Is there a dollar figure attached to the Prosperity Initiative?
There is not, and we don't plan on it costing anything. It's not designed right now to start a new program, if you will. Mm-hmm. We are taking three county employees who have already are part of the county and realigning them into an office together, if you will. And then any of the elements would then come with an individual price tag as it goes to the board. If, for example, we wanted to come back and say childcare is important, we would like the county to do X or Y, then there will be costs associated as different elements may come forward for additional discussion.
Supervisor Steve Christie was concerned that a decision like this on the initiative that would affect taxpayers for years to come was being made without a full board because Sharon Bronson has resigned. Was that a legitimate concern?
Well, I think whenever we're one down, it's a concern that not everyone is represented, but I can let people in District 3 know that since this was a year-long process, staff that was working on developing the plan met numerous times with Supervisor Bronson and her staff so that there was input from folks representing the district at the time as it was being formulated.
I wanted to have a few words from you about Sharon Bronson and the process now that is going on to replace Sharon Chan.
Well, and as I'm sure your listeners know, Supervisor Bronson resigned from the board in November after 27 years of service, being the longest-serving member of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, I believe any Board of Supervisors, and again, representing the longest stretch of international border of any county in the country. So she has done a lot and worked very, very hard on behalf of Pima County, and we should certainly thank her for that service. What the board is doing now is they will be appointing an individual to serve out the remainder of Supervisor Bronson's term. That individual has to be a Democrat, live in the district, and will only serve until the end of the term, which is the end of 2024. Mm-hmm. There have been 8 applicants. The League of Women Voters will be organizing and conducting interviews with each of the 8 on Monday afternoon from, mm-hmm. I believe, 5 to 7:30, I believe. And any information about that could be found at pima.gov, but it will all be, it's a virtual set of interviews. So
were these people vetted, Jen?
Each of the 8
Was there any kind of background check on them?
We're going through the background check right now.
Okay.
We did get all of their affidavits. We have financial statements, everything as if they were running for office. Uh-huh. And then we are going through the background check that we would use for any new county employee and making sure that we know, that we learn from that.
Okay, Dan, time is short. Go ahead.
We have a situation down in Green Valley where a homeowner, property owner, has blocked the Anza Trail. The county went in there, ripped out 3 layers of fencing, and one of them is back up. The county's reluctant to talk because it's going to go into litigation, but what do you do in a situation like that? There's an easement across the property, but he's not he's blocking hikers and people are going around or stopping, turning around, whatever.
I think there's a couple of things going on, Dan, that obviously we have been communicating with the individual for some time. We are believing it's going into litigation, but it is also my understanding more recently that the individual has indicated a willingness to actually mediate or have expanded conversations. So we are looking at how we could use mediation for that. how we work with our department that's talking with them to see, can we hit a reset at some point and say, okay, everybody, you know, take a breath. What do you need to be made whole? How do we make sure that we move forward with this?
So in short, it's possible, and I think this is the learning point for everybody, it's possible to own a piece of property but not control the whole piece of property.
Correct.
Okay, because
yes,
he owns part of the river,
yeah.
And then the easement and everything. I think he was really surprised by that.
Correct.
So,
Dan, what are we missing? Anything else in your stack of stuff?
You know, I love what Jan mentioned earlier about the election, and it's just I know it's not quite as dire as nothing gets done during an election year, but it's going to be a little tougher to push things through because there is a lot of everyone wants their opponent to look bad, and this has got to be a tough year, especially because we're really expecting a long 2024 election cycle.
You are absolutely right. And just another element of it is we run the elections too.
Yeah.
And elections, it is much more difficult to find volunteers and individuals to come in and work at elections these days. That's just the reality that it's a scary place sometimes for folks. But
and I know you're always thinking about the budget. We're halfway through the calendar year and you're already thinking, oh my goodness, I better get those numbers ready for the next budget.
The first memos have gone out to departments. We start in October, actually beginning to look at the next year. And
how's that next year looking?
I will tell you, I'm always a pessimist. I think I'm a glass half empty kind of gal, and I worry every day about what do we need to do. We're looking at everything.
You and I are worriers.
Worriers. You got it. But what are we doing that we shouldn't be doing? You know, are there programs that we need to just shut down? So we're looking at all of that.
All right. Jan, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill, so much.
Hope
thank you, Dan.
Have a great, carve out a pretty good holiday season. We'll see.
Going out to Mona's now. I'll let you know how that's right.
There you go. Enough sugar to fuel you
that's
at least through the rest of the afternoon.
That's it. Thank
all
you.
All right. Dan, stick around. I want to talk. You had a mine tour yesterday.
I sure did. I was up on the Freeport Mine and overlooking the tailings and all that.
And that's the first time you've been there
in about 12, 13 years. Yeah, you don't get invites up there real often.
All right.
But it was
tour. We'll hear about that when we come back on the Buckmaster Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
I've known the Chavez family for 35 years, and thanks to Chavez since 67, you won't find any soft, saggy cushions at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Chavez since 67 can restuff your cushions with new, firm, high-density foam. What a difference that makes. They also offer full upholstery services. Give them a call at 520-795-8032 or check out the website ChavezSince67.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our thanks to Jan Lusher, Pima County Administrator, for coming in and talking about this really escalating situation. Dan Scheer here from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Escalating, I say, because last I had heard it was like 1,500 maybe migrants coming up through Tucson daily. Well, it's now, as Jan pointed out, 2,000. This is a mess, Dan.
It is, and I think we all saw it building throughout the year, and especially since July, and I believe October was the highest apprehension rate for the Border Patrol in our sector ever. And I believe there were 55,000 apprehensions, and that's the illegal immigrants, and now we're dealing with the asylum seekers on top of that, and it is really something else. I thought it was interesting talking about whether Pima County had created a situation that kind of made this worse. Was it
why
inviting?
By making it look at the plan that Jan and the team worked out in 2019, making it look too attractive?
Yeah, maybe they were too good or welcoming. And but remember down there, we're talking about a lot of people who are not highly educated. They're generally not going to look at the news.
No.
It's all a word of mouth situation.
Yeah.
And if it's word got out that Pima County is has good food and a pillow for you, did that cause more people to come over here?
I don't know the answer to it. West Africa and Dakar, Senegal, do you think they know where Tucson, Arizona is or Pima County? No, they don't know.
No, but I think they get plugged into just kind of the word on the street type of a thing.
Yeah.
And so it's a sad situation, but focus on what she also said, that the average person is here 72 hours. They're coming through here going elsewhere, but if we have street releases, do they hang out a little bit longer?
Or is there now being called community releases?
Community releases.
That's what the officials in Nogales are calling them after yesterday.
Yeah.
Nearly 300.
That's a good thing.
In the community release. How was your mine tour? What was that about?
Well, it's up on the Freeport McMoran mine.
And where
up
is
there.
That one?
Sarita mine. It is right next to Green Valley. It's all those tailings you see.
Oh, that's the one that backs up.
Correct. But it was there first, so we can't bellyache about it. So, they've been mining there since the 50s. Green Valley started in 1964. So, it is a very complex operation that they pull off up there. And it was very interesting. I appreciated getting up there, but it had been since 2010, since I was up there. Gabby Giffords, when she was representing us in Congress, actually invited me along, and I showed up with her, and they were not expecting a journalist and weren't real happy, but they weren't about to tell a congresswoman no. So I got up there then, but it's been a while since I've been back. And so,
what's their workforce? Do you have any?
1,200. They said it's 1,200.
Okay.
Right now, and they're going 24/7. They actually have four shifts, and
wow.
So just going around the clock, and they do a lot of work. Safety is always number one. Of course, you kind of get a little bit of the dog and pony, but we also ask them some pretty tough questions about what's going on there and what the future
water.
Is. And water, talked a lot about water. And I'll tell you this, they figure they've got 80 more years of mining there.
What?
Yeah. surprised me too.
I've flown over it, of course, when taking off from TIA.
Sure.
And I can't believe how deep that mine is. To get from the top to the bottom, I mean, it seems like it would take a long time.
Yeah, and I know we have a caller who's asking
do they mine?
Yeah, it's mostly copper, but also moly, which has a lot of uses, molybdenum. And if I don't blow that, we call it moly. But one of the purposes of moly is that it strengthens steel. And so they actually get a decent amount of that out of the ground. So they're a profitable operation, obviously. Uh-huh. And copper prices right now, I think yesterday they were $3.70 or something like that. And that is good. So they're very happy with the direction things are going. But they also understand that, you know what, they're in an industry that is takes a lot of flack. But I will say they were very candid in answering our questions. I appreciated that.
So they're not the new kid on the neighborhood, but that copper world is the new.
Yes, copper world is owned by Hudbay out of Canada, and they're eventually going to open up possibly 7 open pit mines within view of Green Valley and Sahuarita, and that's real concerning. But that's where the copper is, and so it's very close to the surface, and they're going to be digging for years.
So there'd be Green Valley'd be kind of sandwiched between copper or between mining operations.
Right. And if you thought we were worried about Rosemont on the other side of the mountain, now we have this one staring us in the face. But you know what? The same people who are bellyache a little bit about it also understand private property rights. And so they do have hoops they have to jump through, and they are doing so. And I think they're doing it right. It's just that it's in an unfortunate place, and we're going to be looking at it.
Anything else you want to bring our listeners up to date about Green Valley? Just a few seconds.
You know what? We had a guy who was in the hospital for 5 days because he was bitten by a Western Diamondback rattlesnake.
Oh, my gosh.
And three of those in ICU. And it was just a reminder that these things are not only out in the heat, they're out really.
I thought that they were. Well, I'm learning something here, and I've been around for a while. I thought they went into their.
Not this one. And we actually had someone, an expert, tell us that he had heard of bites at 36 degrees.
Oh, man, I got to be more careful when I'm out doing that watering, and especially with the time changing, or not time doesn't change, but it's still kind of dark even at 7 o'clock in the morning when I'm out there.
One very brief rule, and that is don't let your hands go where your eyes haven't been.
Very good advice, Dan Shearer. You always have great advice. All right. Thanks, Dan, and I hope you and yours have a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Bill.
Okay, thanks. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
And away we go with Weekend Watch, presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Silver City, all that beautiful Victorian architecture looking so Christmassy. Downtown Silver City, cool place to hang out over the holidays. SouthwestNewMexico.org, their fine website. Check it out before you jump in the car or truck or hop on the motorcycle. Maybe a little chilly for the motorcycle. 3-hour drive over to Silver City, the mile high elevation means it will be cooler. But heck, I could do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness with temperatures in the mid to upper 50s. Just as they say, put on the layers. Have your down vest and you're ready to go. All right, let's welcome now Dan Gibson for our Weekend Watch. Dan, how are you?
I'm great. I'm thinking, considering the Silver City thing. Just kicking around. I hear they have a Victorian Christmas event going on right now.
Yeah. You could, you're going to have a little time off, I hope, over the holidays. What's going on this weekend, buddy?
Well, you know, top of the list. And if you're going anywhere this weekend, consider that the 4th Avenue Street Fair is happening. It generally has about 350,000 attendees every year.
Wow. So
that kicked off today at 10 a.m. There will be Santa Claus there Saturday and Sunday. I cannot attest whether it's the real Santa Claus or impersonator, but I'm sure it'll be fine. Just as a note, there's a free shuttle that runs every 15 minutes, Friday and Saturday. There are two stops, Pennington and 6th Street, and then the southeast corner of 5th Avenue and 7th Street. So save yourself some hassle. Park downtown, maybe. Park at the Tyndall Avenue garage. Take the streetcar. Plenty of options, but that's happening both today, tomorrow, and Sunday. Live music, food, all that stuff. I understand that there is some a new vendor, Ducky's Pineapple Banana Bread, which is a little bit hard for me to get my head around, but I think I might have to go down there just for that.
That's always been one of my very, very favorite. I love banana bread.
Me too. Pineapple feels like a little bit like, I know people put chocolate chips in there. That's not my thing.
Pineapple, maybe.
It feels very tropical.
Yeah, I could go for that. Wow. Anyway.
I'm going to see if I can get a loaf. We'll split it.
That would be so cool. The street fair has probably been around for generations now here in Tucson.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it is in its 54th year
year. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah, 350 vendors, a whole lot happening.
All right.
I don't know if we appreciate it enough in a way.
Yeah, well, for folks that, maybe you can go to the street fair, is there anything else on the agenda?
Yes. I'm glad you asked, Bill. Downtown, it's one of my favorite events monthly. Second Sundays, there's an AZ in there. It's the holiday edition of the event at the Tucson Museum of Art. It's happening Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. This time, it is with a partnership with Ballet Tucson, so it'll be a Nutcracker-inspired story time in class. There will also be a performance by the Arizona Women's Chorus, family yoga. You can also see the museum's galleries. Also, if you attend, you can get an exclusive discount code to see the Ballet Tucson's Nutcracker. So, I mean, you're kind of like, you can't afford to not go in a way.
Yeah,
but the Sugar Plum Fairy from the Nutcracker will be there, and the children of all ages can learn some dance moves, some ballet dance moves, and hear a Nutcracker story as well.
All right, let's take a third item before we say goodbye.
Well, how about Cat Trivia Night, Bill? Tonight at El Jefe Cat Cafe. I don't know. How much do you feel like you know about cats?
Quite a bit.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you probably be right up for this. It's from 7 to 8 p.m. at LFA Cat Cafe, which is on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell. It is there's trivia about cats, but also you get to have – there will be 35 cats just hanging around.
Oh.
So it seems like a pretty full evening all around. It's an adult-level quiz, by the way.
Oh, very cool. So, not interesting.
For the peak cat enjoyer.
Yep. All right, Dan. Have a great weekend. Thanks so much.
You too. I'll see you with the banana bread soon.
All right. Buckmaster presentation of me, Bill Buckmaster, and my business, Communications LLC, wholly responsible for the content of the program. I want to say thanks to everybody at Bustos Media Tucson, the entire team here making us feel so welcome. And of course, that includes my longtime engineer and producer, Tom Fairbanks, who had a birthday last week. He thought he would get by with me saying happy birthday. So there it is, Tom. Have a great weekend, everybody.